Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello and welcome to the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast. I'm Steve Cording. Lawrence is not here this week. He's away on his Rugby Works cycle slam and we'll be finding out later on how he is getting on. However, I am joined in studio by the Evening Standard Rugby correspondent, Nick Puriwell. Nick, lovely to see you in person. How are you?
Thanks very much, Steve. I'm very well. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Good. Later, we're going to be hearing from Red Roses captain Marley Packer ahead of the game between England and Ireland in the Women's Six Nations at Twickenham this weekend. But first, we are joined by a Harlequins player who, during 13 years at the club, has played 238 games and won two Premiership titles, been capped twice by England. He played in Saturday's amazing 42-41 win over Bordeaux in the Investec Champions Cup quarterfinal. And actually, at this point, I feel like standing up and applauding. It's Will Collier. Will, thank you for coming in. Are you still on cloud nine?
Just about, yeah. Thank you very much for having me. No, I still am on cloud nine. It's right up there, one of the biggest wins in my time at Quinn's, probably in my career full stop. So, yeah, slowly coming down off it.
How was the dressing room afterwards? It must have been a lot of celebrating. Did you actually get a chance to enjoy the experience?
Yeah, there was. I actually got a bit emotional after the final whistle because, you know, when Lukey was lining up that kick, in my heart of hearts, I thought we've kind of blown it here. And when their crowd gets on top again, and didn't think it was going to go away right at the end. So when it did, the emotions got the better of me a bit. But it was actually a bit of a smash and grab our end. We had to leave after the game. We flew straight back, so we had a good time on the plane though. I think the pilot has a bit to say about that.
And post match celebration since you've been back or not?
Yeah, I think some of the boys were at the ship last night, but I've been going steady, getting ready for sail. You know, yeah. True professional. Yeah.
One question I was going to ask you actually is we see a lot of social videos of teams celebrating with their songs. Northampton have their shoes, don't they? And Saracens have got the old tiki tang. What do Quins do? Do they do anything?
We've had a few things over the years, but you know, I don't like when things are forced like that, when it becomes a bit artificial. And yeah, you know, under some of the other coaches, they've tried to implement a certain song, and one of the coaches, I won't say who, actually tried to change the lyrics to "Quins are on fire, your defence is terrified" or something, which, you know, I can't really imagine the the boys next door, the opposite team, hearing that and just cringing. So I think as a result of that, we've done nothing really since. You just have a couple of beers.
Yeah.
Boys have got over 50 caps. We have a nice little tankard that we have our beer in afterwards at home.
Oh, nice.
But that's about as far as it goes.
The other thing I've seen today is that there are some suggestions that you should stand for Prime Minister. seen that on social? Have you seen that on socials today?
I saw, Mark Lambert very kindly tweeted that, I think. He's definitely more suited than I am. He's a bit more articulate probably, but more well-educated. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't got my life after rugby plans fully sorted yet, so we'll see.
So take us inside that, the post-match celebrations and the plane ride back, the stuff you can sort of talk about. What's that like? Because I'm sure, obviously, you're kind of shattered, but full of adrenaline anyway, and it's a great chance to kind of have relax a little bit. What's it like to when you know you've pulled off a massive win like that?
Yeah, I mean, boys all react differently to big wins. Me personally, I go slightly pensive, and I think in my old age, I used to go wild and celebrate, but I just kind of, you know, soak it all in and look around the changing room and have a beer. It was nice. We had, obviously, Ben Tapawai, he was an old Quinn, and Charlie Matthews were there, so I was catching up with them after the game. But, you know, some boys are going wild. We spent a good debrief in the changing room, but, I mean, it took about 4 hours to stop sweating. I was slightly worried, and I had a couple of beers and thought, I'll probably chug a Powerade here because I'm definitely low on salts. But yeah, it was just that kind of, we have a guy at the club called Andy Sanger who does a lot of player welfare stuff, and he talks about this slightly cliche knowing nod thing. You know, you don't say too much. You kind of just have that look in your eye when you know you've done something special. And there's quite a bit of that after the game. You know, a lot of boys just collapsed in their chairs sweating, just kind of looking across, having a beer and nodding at each other, you know, knowing that we've shared in something really tough and come through it together.
So it's the first time that Quins have been in the Champions Cup semi-final. I'll say that again. First time in the Champions Cup semi-final. Make you smile. You started the game as massive underdogs. Bordeaux were 7-1 on to win. Did that help in your motivation, knowing that everybody basically, I mean, sorry, even including us last week, had written you off?
Yeah, massively. I think for most teams and environments, they say they thrive when they're underdogs, but Quins in particular, because when the shackles are off, we've got no pressure, there's no stress. With the personnel we've got and the way we play, it's just the perfect combination. And, you know, I'm sure we'll be going into the next European game as big underdogs as well, so don't want to kind of jinx anything or try and make Toulouse switch it, but, you know, it's a real weapon for us. And all week in the preparation, knowing that, but nothing to lose, knowing you can shock them very quickly, the opposition, and especially against French crowds like that, if you can shift the momentum quite quickly, it can work hugely in your favour. So it's something we react well to as a team.
I defend myself slightly. I did say that although I sort of expected Bordeaux to win, I did say Quins, because of their style, oddly had a better chance against Bordeaux than Sarri's in terms of the way they approached the game. And that's how it shook out, didn't it? You know, obviously almost basketball, wasn't it? What we score, they score. But do you think the fact that, you know, you stuck to your guns, is that what kind of saw you through?
I think that's it, yeah. And we stayed true to our identity. And we play, you know, we're there to entertain. That's the whole purpose of Quins. And, you know, should be the purpose of rugby, is we're there to entertain. We've got very strong foundations. We can hold our own up front, but then it's about scoring tries and having fun and doing it with a smile on your face, which I think we did. And if you look back at a lot of the big wins in Quins history, it's done in that same style. So the final, the semi-final from Premiership and other big European games, it's slightly throwing caution to the wind and let's just jouer, which is the term that we use quite a bit, and just play, let the boys play.
Now, talk me through that front row. Finn Baxter was immense. I've read some quotes from you today about how well he played. But when you come up against a guy who is 26 stone and you're lining up against somebody that big, what's your mindset before you start a game like that? Because he just took Tammy Farina to the cleaners, didn't he? I mean, you could see he was breathless. I mean, he wasn't even, when he got the ball in attack, he wasn't even moving. He was just basically falling over. So he was tired. But what do you do when you come up against somebody who's that big?
Well, I mean, it kind of sums up our performance because in terms of underdogs, that's the perfect comparison, is someone like Finn against Tamavuna. You know, he's young, he's baby-faced, he's not expected to go out there and do much. If he holds his own, that's a big success. But he goes out there and does what he does. And that kind of leaked out to the rest of the team. And then in terms of mindset for Finn, don't want to build him up too much because he's young and I hate building up a young player and putting extra pressure, but that's kind of one of his big, huge positive attributes is his mindset. Because when you get into a scrum, you can't think about what you're going to do next. It's kind of, Adam Jones, Bomb had this thing, you know, if you think you're dead, the old Top Gun thing. You've got to be so in the moment. Yeah. You're not thinking, oh, I might just tilt my head here. Or I might just change my bind there. Because by the time you've done that, you'll be getting drilled. They'll have already adjusted. So it's you're literally in the most, almost like a Buddhist monk. You're kind of so engaged in what you're doing. And you can see that concentration and the intensity in his face when he's backing down. You know, he did an amazing job, but it was also the whole eight, the whole scrum, the second rows, Ernie Herbst and Steph and Chandler, Webb and Domers. We had this mindset that this is the area we're going to really take away from them. And when you work as an eight, as a good unit like that, you can do some real damage. I mean, there's things like some of the small nuances around it. I'm going to go deep into scrums there because I always do, but you know, like the first, you know,
because it's fascinating. I always say for people who've never, if you've never put your head in the front row, you kind of can't know.
Why would you want to?
Well, I mean, that's what I love. I like trying to open the lid slightly on it. You know, you talk about the pack, and it was the pack's kind of challenge to win that battle up front. And it really was a pack collective thing that we did together. And I was talking about that first scrum penalty, you know, Finn popped Tamafuna and drilled him back. But the nuance around that is if Jack Walker hadn't kind of adjusted his left bind slightly to let Tamafuna pop up, and then keep Finn down low, and then we'd all drive them back together, it might not be in the same picture. We could have stood up together as a front row and it would have been parity. Mm. It's these tiny, small details, which obviously it's incredibly hard to spot as a fan or anyone else, that make a massive difference in the game.
Totally. I mean, it's fascinating as well that, I mean, the scrum has come under so much spotlight, hasn't it? Particularly this season with attempts by World Rugby to potentially speed up the game. There's talk of them changing the rules so that you obviously couldn't have another reset scrum if you give away a free kick. Mm. Do you think changes should be made to the scrum as it is? Can you see why people want it? I mean, Saturday was a perfect game. You had perfect scrummaging. Mm. You had perfect attack. But there are games that we've all been to where the scrum's been awful. It's taken so long, so many resets.
Yeah.
What changes would you make?
Wholeheartedly, I don't think fundamental changes need to take place. I saw Flats speak perfectly about this, as he always does with scrums. We can speed up the process, especially when it's a reset or there's a collapse and we're trying to go again. I think there's a responsibility as players and as the ref to, right, come on, lads, let's get this going, reset quickly. I don't know how to implement that. Is there a, you know, stop clock, or do you get the timer out or something? Mm. Or just hurry up. It's similar to when you know, they have those long kicks and you're trying to do an exit. We've got to rush up that process. But I think, having said that, within that process, when the game stops for a scrum, there's so much more we can do around educating people about the scrum and enjoying it and building it up. And, you know, on the weekends, if you're playing in France, when they love scrums out there and some other big partisan countries do, they celebrate a scrum like they do a try. They go mad for it. It's incredible. It's the most amazing feeling. And then vice versa.
Ben Hill style.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, vice versa. If they get drilled, it's the same kind of thing. All the oxygen gets sucked out of them.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to do. But I think in that lull when there's a scrum and everyone's thinking, what do we talk about? What do we do? It's incredibly hard for commentators or pundits who don't understand that area to have a proper say. But I think there's more you can do. You know, you can kill fans with stats. Let's get a load of stats out. This is how much the different packs are weighing. This is how they're scrummaging this stage of the season. These are the penalties they're giving away. And not just that, I think, you know, I've got so many thoughts on this. I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but there's very few people who know about scrums properly. And obviously the ones that do are scrum coaches. And they're going to hate this because I know front row love operating in the shadows, but I think we've got to bring them into the game. And, you know, as front rows, we have a responsibility to open the lid on what actually goes on in the scrum.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, how you interview coaches and stuff as the game's going on, there's a scrum penalty, the scrum's taking a while, get the scrum coach in, get them to talk about what they've planned that week, what's going on the next week, how the season's been going, what they've targeted, do a bit of analysis. I think that would be hugely educational for all fans and, you know, get people more engaged in what's going on in the scrum. There's a lot more we can do.
Yeah, definitely. Talk about scrum coach, Adam Jones. How much of an influence has he had on you and also with Finn's development as a player?
He's been huge. I mean, I'm very fortunate I got to play with Bomb as well. So I had, you know, 2-3 years when I was actually competing against him. So off the bat, we're mates, which helps a lot. And he's kind of really helped oversee my last few years in terms of the big set piece development. It's obviously there's a lot of technique stuff and nuance we talk about, but it's more the kind of mindset and the kind of the deeper feel of the scrum, which is what I think he's so good at. Because, you know, when he scrummed back in the day, it was a different scrum to what we have now. The rules have changed, and he was back in the day, we used to fly in on these big sets and you have huge collisions and you just drive through. And he was incredible at that. And then by the time his career ended, it was these tiny little punchy sets and it changed a bit. But fundamentally, it's about the desire to want to scrum and the aggressiveness that you can harness within that and then generating that around the whole pack. So getting the whole eight to buy in and kind of rallying the troops into it. It's, you know, something South Africa do so well is you see their back five, their number eight is scrummaging as hard as the tight head. They go mad. They're trying to break the second row spine. And that's something Bomb does really well. And obviously it's easy because he's got this huge credit in the bank from his past experience. So boys do buy into it. Because, you know, when you're doing a scrum meeting, you're not going to be able to bore the back five on, look at this bind, look at this setup. They're going to switch off. You've got to get them all buzzed around other areas of it. And let's get excited to really make an impact on this and, you know, drive the team through. And it's something he does really well. And obviously, you know, he's brought out huge talent like Finn.
Yeah, completely.
It must be difficult to get that balance, like you're saying, between if you think you're dead and also, like you're saying, on Jack changing his bind to allow to just the tweak in the moment on the field, reacting to what he was seeing and feeling, to know that you then can obviously go for that penalty.
I mean, massively,
is that one of the most difficult things, just kind of getting that balance between instinct and...
Hugely, and it comes from practice, as any of this success does. And I'm a big believer in the old Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours thing. That's huge. That comes from Wacker practicing that week in, week out. He's done that for quite a few seasons now. That little thing, for Titus trying to stand up, he lets him go, and then we push through. And it comes from training. You know, a lot of the scrums we have in the week are more competitive than some of the ones we have on the weekend, which is credit to our squad, because we've got some brilliant squad players who challenge us a lot. But it's not, no one said to Jack this week, But, you know, I mentioned they might stand up under pressure, but we didn't say, do this with your shoulder and let Ben stand up. He knows that instinct. He feels it. It's like almost like a wrestle, isn't it? Or like jiu-jitsu. Yeah. You're feeling feeling the opposition pressure. You've got to adjust to it slightly and go with it when they push and then know when to slip. Mm. But it's not necessarily conscious. It's, you know, it's the subconscious feel of it all.
And now we've mentioned next up is Toulouse away on May the 5th. They beat Exeter 64-26 yesterday. Game was quite close at half-time. Was really impressed with how Exeter were doing, but obviously Toulouse ran away within the second half. Did you allow yourself to watch that game?
I did, yeah. Well, the kids were charging around, so I caught bits of it. I saw Jack Willis having an absolute stormer.
He did, yeah.
Obviously, watch the scrum. Yeah, shock, watch the scrums.
Do you see any weaknesses that you can work on?
Oh, there's tons. I'm not going to tell them here. There's loads of stuff. But I mean, it's perfect. How good? It's exactly what we want. Mm. It's exactly what we want. You know, they've come to the Stoop. They drew us at home. Yeah. We had a really tough game there. So we're under no illusions what we're facing. It's going to be a tougher challenge than Bordeaux, I think. But I think we're going to approach it in a similar way. And as you know, with Quinns, it's kind of all bets are off. Who knows where it's going to go. But hopefully if we get them into a game of rugby and we're both playing and we're both trying to score tries, then I think anything's possible.
I was going to say, how have you pulled yourself together? Because it's probably slightly unfair because obviously the Six Nations break had happened, but the dismantling that you suffered at Tottenham against Saracens, so the way that you've recovered from that, the ding-dong with Bath, the Glasgow game that I went to where you were superb again, did Billy Millard do anything different after that defeat, or is there anything that you've done to bring things back on an even keel?
Yeah, there's a few things. I mean, it was horrendous, speaking frankly. It was an horrendous loss against, you know, your biggest rivals. Second time that season. We haven't been them away from home in God knows how long. It's been almost a decade, I think. So there's so many different battles going on within that. The personal ones, the Smiths against the Farrells, the whole rivalry of London, it being at Tottenham. But there was a lot going on. You know, boys coming back from England who are pretty fried and exhausted and then getting put into that environment, which is really tough. And this kind of, you know, this mini pre-season we've had, it's been bizarre. It's been really weird. Yeah. You know, we've had this momentum, suddenly it stops and everyone's shooting from the hip as to how to prepare for the rest of the season because it's never been done before. So our coaches are trying to put this plan in place to take on Saris, and, you know, very quickly momentum went in their favour. And they're very good at keeping us down when they've got us down and knowing how to deal with us. And I think, you know, they scored three very quick tries and then that was it. It was kind of game over. But it was horrendous. And the week after, there wasn't too much reinventing the wheel. What have we done here? What can we do? We still knew it's not changes to the team. We still got second in the league. We're still in the quarters of Europe. You know, we knew we were a great team still. Hmm. It was just that bad day. And then you look back at the season, you've had Saris getting drilled by Exeter. All these teams have their days when...
It's been mad, isn't it?
They have, you know, they have these huge losses. Northampton had it as well. Like, they come. And, you know, I'm really proud of the way the boys reacted to that and bounced back. And it was a huge squad effort, because then the following week, different boys who didn't play in that came in and stood up, and we got the result against Bath. So
There's a bit of power in it. Isn't there in sort of saying, look, we don't need to do loads of soul searching here, because it's not just because that happened once, it doesn't mean everything's, you know, fallen apart.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, you know, players will know if you get into the team meeting, if you've had a loss like that, you get into the team meeting on a Monday and sometimes the chairs have changed and they're in a big circle and you're thinking, oh God, this is going to be a pretty grim meeting. It's going to be, you know, going through clip by clip and getting peppered. And credit to the coaches, we didn't really do any of that. Well, I think what the real strength was, which Billy's good at, very good at, is it was a lot of one-on-one conversations, a lot of personal conversations with players, nothing getting called out in a meeting. Obviously, there was collective own and responsibility on letting the fans and the team down. There was a lot of that, but it was those one-on-one conversations and amongst players as well. No, you're going to do better for each other the following week.
So we have got Premiership action back this weekend. You've got a trip to Sale on Sunday, and then the following week, we've got the big summer kickoff at Twickenham on the 27th of April, which is mouthwatering to say the least. Quinns against Saints, obviously the only two English teams left in the Champions Cup and currently first and fourth in the Prem, so it promises to be a cracker. Tickets are selling fast, but there's still some available, and we'll give the details in a minute. Will, what's your best memory from a big summer kickoff and why?
We've only had a couple. It's quite a new thing. Mine personally is, you know, quite a personal thing. Last season after the match, we lost, it was Bath, wasn't it? We played Bath. And it's very simple. My boys came on the pitch afterwards, and I'd been injured for quite a bit that season, and I'd missed out on a lot of the season, and that was one of my first two or three games back and started and went pretty well. Scrum went well, so that was all that mattered. And I got to take the kids on afterwards, and you know, the whole atmosphere, something we do very well, that kind of party atmosphere.
How old are they?
I've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old.
Oof.
So yeah, they were young. Yeah. They were young back then, but they were charging around the pitch and, you know, just kind of sit down and let them watch them go. And it's really, really special. We're really lucky to have a club that's able to put on these big occasions, and it's a family club, so the family get involved.
With the games you host at Twickenham, obviously the fans get right into the spirit of it. The crowds are amazing, and it's totally different atmosphere, isn't it? Certainly very different from an England game at Twickenham. One thing I noticed was sometimes when you had Faithless, it felt like the warm-up was extended, and I think that you were warming up while Faithless were performing almost, and you could almost see it really energised you as a group. And I think that almost helped in the, you had a great fast start.
Yeah,
won that game pretty comprehensively, didn't you? Does that sort of thing, it seemed like quite smart to harness the, you know, what's, you know, the elements of what's around you almost.
Yeah, massively. I mean, in terms of energy, it gave us a huge amount of energy, and it's quite surreal. Obviously, you're warming up and you can see there's a concert going on just, you know, a couple of meters away. It was quite tricky because you couldn't hear a thing. So, you know, I think we missed a few of our warm-up drills, which was quite good for us. So actually, you know, the strength and conditioners are shouting, saying, get over there, we've got to hit the pads or whatever. What's that, mate? You know. And we had to swerve it. But it was, you know, the energy it gives you is incredible. And obviously, Jess Glynn coming up, hopefully we get a similar kind of thing. But the whole, you know, atmosphere and the occasion mentioned, the walk over from the stoop. You know, I was talking about when you walk into these big French stadiums and you have that big partisan crowd. We were fortunate we get a similar kind of thing. You know, we all go to the stoop beforehand. And the first time I experienced it was in 2012 and we won the Premiership. We weren't really expecting it, but it's kind of, you know, four or five fans deep, the whole way across. You're over there, 3-1-6, over the bridge.
Yeah.
And everyone's going mad. Everyone's screaming. You see the family in the crowd, and it's the most amazing experience, having that kind of guard of honour going the whole way across, you know, into Twickenham, walking through. It kind of sets the tone for the whole day and the whole atmosphere for the fans and the players.
I suppose it's quite easy, isn't it, to not to be removed from the players and the fans, but to just, because you've got so many things to focus on in a week building up to a game, there aren't that many opportunities to, I suppose, to interact with it so closely, are there? But when you're right up against them, you know, they're right there and you can see, I suppose, the whites of people's eyes and what it means to them.
It's huge, yeah. And, you know, I think fan interaction is such a huge, important thing in rugby. And you know, I keep talking about France because that's where we just played, but that's something they do very well over there, and bringing the fans into the game. And, you know, being at Quinn's for such a long time now, you get to know almost most of the diehard fans, and you know them all, you see them all, and you know them by name, which is a really special thing. And, you know, they feel they have real ownership over the team, because they do, you know, they own a part of it. You're paying this money to come watch them play week in, week out. You've got season tickets, you know, it's a part of you, and we really are a part of them as well. So to be so immersed in the fans when you're walking over them, we're lucky we've got such incredible fans. You saw the travelling ones on the weekend, and, you know, for the last decade, I think we've had a really special group of fans. It's really special to share in the atmosphere before and after the game.
You ever lost anybody on that walk over from the stoop? Anybody ever, you know, slipped out while they're on the walk over or not?
No, I don't think we've lost anyone, but we've gained a few people. You know, there's a few stragglers who sneak in. Actually, when we won the final, we did the walk over then. In 21, my brother-in-law and I think my wife got caught up in it, waving the flags at the front of the parade. I think everyone thought they were kind of chaperoning us in a security or something, which is quite funny. He certainly loved it. But you get the odd straggler who kind of sneaks on.
There's been Hawaiian shirts worn before, and budgie smugglers I've seen in the PR
things, yeah.
from Quinn's. Any
oh, the budgie smugglers,
any
yeah.
exclusives on what they're going to do for this one?
I think
have you been asked to wear any or not?
No, I've got a pair of Quinn's budgies. They actually Judas me by posting me doing a jumper to the pool wearing them in Portugal.
Cheers, guys.
So I don't know, maybe if I score a try I'll get the budgies out, but I'm sure we get a financial fine for
I
that.
Definitely am not wearing a pair of budgie smugglers. Nick, have you got a pair, or did you ever own a pair when
not
you were at
me.
School?
No,
never.
Oh, they're great.
Or was
it's
a
freeing.
Short man?
Yeah, I was a short man, yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
So, I have to ask you about Joe Marler. Is he the maddest man alive?
You know, I'm really lucky. I've known Joe for a couple of decades now, so got a very good relationship with him. You know, he's one of my best mates, and I absolutely love playing with him. But he's a hell of a character, isn't he? But he's played so much top quality rugby. It's a crazy amount. He's so durable. He just doesn't stop week in, week out. So I think that, you know, that allows him to be the character he is when he's playing. So I don't know if he gets bored or, you know, sometimes in a scrum, I was, you know, talking about, we're just dialing into the scrum. You can see he's chatting to people. You know, he's trying to put them off and do different bits and bobs, which I certainly wouldn't do. But I'm glad I'm with him and not against him. And
so he does talk. Will you be packed down? Because I always wonder about that. Because, you know, at grassroots, you get a bit of lighthearted banter, wouldn't you? But he would indulge in it even if you
plenty of that. Yeah. I think it keeps him engaged. You know, I think it's quite funny. I'm always on the other side. You can just hear him kind of going every now and then. obviously, it's nothing bad, but it's quite funny stuff.
Is he still riding his little motorbike?
He is, yeah. It was he parked up when he went away for Six Nations, just left it in the changing room, taking up all the space.
And what happened to it when he got back?
I think he pumped up the tyres and off he went. Oh. Yeah, I mean, we train up kind of 5-10 minute walk away.
You didn't steal his wheels or anything like
that? No, I was tempted to do something. I don't think there's many boys who would be tempted to be fair.
No, well, he's done a lot, obviously, outside of rugby, as have you. You're currently co-owner, co-founder of a Bristol restaurant, Pigsty, with your former teammate, Ollie Cohn. You've also got a little bit of a wine collection, I hear, as well. So are these things that you're preparing for in terms of life after rugby already?
Yeah, I mean, that as well as being an MP, as apparently Quinns are going to say. But I've done a lot of stuff exploring life after rugby. I kind of went deep into my passions, first and foremost. So, you know, wine and food.
Wine and
food, yeah, it's a good start, especially as a prop. And I'm really lucky in where that journey's taken me, especially with the Jolly Hog stuff with Ollie, who's one of my big mentors in terms of rugby and life after rugby. You know, they're based down in Bristol. I had a bad injury, I had an ACL in 2015. We founded a restaurant together. Very long story. We did a couple of pop-ups and stuff. And then from the restaurant, I got involved more in the main group, which is amazing. And they've kind of gone from strength to strength. You know, I talk about Quinns being a family club. Jolly Hog's a family business. It's all family owned. I'm the only person, I guess I'm probably surrogate son or something, but not technically family. So it's special to be involved in that.
And I need to ask you about next season. Parlez-vous français or
comme
not?
Comme ça.
Is that all you'll say? Do you know where you're going to be playing next season yet or not?
What I'll say is, you know, I'm a Harlequin through and through. I absolutely love Harlequins. It's my club. I've been a lifelong fan there and I will continue to be a lifelong fan there. Nothing's been properly announced or sorted as yet for next year. The only thing I would say is I love France. It's somewhere I've always wanted to play. I've always said that my whole career. You see on the weekends, test yourself in those arenas, to be fortunate enough to do it week in, week out.
Definitely.
Especially as a prop in the scrum. And I say it's, you know, they celebrate a scrum penalty like they do a try. To have the privilege of going out to play somewhere where that happens week in, week out would be huge. And it'd be an exciting opportunity to explore at some point. But yeah, I'm a Harlequin through and through, lifelong fan. I'll leave it at that.
Very diplomatic answer.
Fair enough. It's the MP, isn't it?
Definitely for Prime Minister. One more thing. Two England caps, which obviously is two more than Nick and I have both won, but is that the one thing that you think you'll look back on your career and go, I wish there'd been a few more, or are you comfortable with that now?
It's funny, I think so. It's my one thing, was I always wanted to play more for England and make a big impact for England. And I've made peace with that. I kind of got those two caps. I think I performed well when I was out there. I've always loved being in the environment, and it's so easy to second guess why didn't it happen. What was it? Was it me as a person? Did I do something wrong in training? Was it something I did when I was playing? You're trying to overthink all these things. Because I never really got clarity on why it didn't happen. And I'm not going to lie, it's something I would have loved to have done more of, 100%. You know, you grow up watching these England players, and especially I think because I think I could have had an impact in that squad. We'll never know. So
no.
I do slightly sway between, or I've made peace with it. I'm happy with where I'm at. Mm. I know personally, I kind of done. I feel like I've done all I can in terms of rugby side of things, which is quite nice to be able to know to feel that as a player. I don't think it's necessarily down to my performance. It might just be the style of player and not fitting into that environment at the right time. And, you know, it could come down to timing. It could be something as simple as that.
I think it's interesting that for the longest time, England's communication was quite bad. And there was probably two generations of players who it was fine for those that were playing all the time, but those that weren't were never entirely sure why or what they needed to do differently. And I think just from anecdotally what players and coaches are saying, that that's very different under Steve Borthwick. And I think that's to their great credit. He seems to be very clear on not just reasons why players are potentially not being selected at a specific point, but what they can do to get back. And Bernal's a great first example of that. He was told very clearly, do specific things, and he carried them all out, and then look what's happened. It won't work for everyone at all, but I think there was a long period of time where players felt they were being selected or brought into England squads, and then England were saying, what you do is great, but we want you to do effectively the opposite.
100%, I had that exact thing when I've been in the environment, and you've changed your game to try and suit this style to fit into this jigsaw a bit more. So, you know, I lost a load of weight, I was really mobile, I was running a quick Bronco. My work rate was through the roof, but I jeopardised the super strengths and what makes me good as a player.
Mm.
And yeah, I could run a quick Bronco, you know, the fitness test, and I was getting better metres, but I wasn't dominating scrums and doing what I know I can do best. You know, credit to Steve, in the few conversations I've had with him, he did say that to me, just kind of scrum and defence and everything else can come, which I feel I did and didn't progress for whatever reason, but at least there was clarity on that.
Yeah,
you're not jeopardising yourself as a player and trying to be someone you're not.
Hopefully that's a lesson for the game, the wider game in the future.
Definitely.
Because you reel off those names. There's so much talent. And in the end, people have got to pick the ones they want, really. Like you say, there's a feel of what, you know, what the squad comes to. But you've got to hope that England start moving back to being one of the best teams around, because there's no shortage of talent, is there? And I think they've got the right people involved now. So fingers crossed.
Well, Will, it's been an absolute pleasure. Now we know you only live down the road. We'll
any time, yeah.
We'll definitely be getting you back in again. Thank you so much for coming on. Good luck with the rest of the season. We'll all be keeping our fingers crossed that we get at least one team in the Champions Cup final.
Cheers, guys.
At Tottenham. And we'll speak to you very soon.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
If you want to enjoy the big summer kickoff, just a reminder, it's on Saturday, the 27th of April. Kickoff just after 3 p.m. Not only will the rugby be fantastic, there'll be entertainment for all the family as Grammy Award winner Jess Glynn will be performing. There are sing-alongs with Masioki, and there are free fairground rides, face painting, plenty of summer food and drink, and lots more. Tickets are on sale now at eticketing.co.uk/harlequins. Prices for adults from £35 and under 18s from £25. So joining us now is England captain Marley Packer, who is with us throughout the Women's Six Nations. Marley, how are you? Looks like you're back training somewhere.
Yeah, we're back at Pennyhill Park this week. Obviously, test match at Twickenham this week against Ireland. So, yeah, it's a full week ahead now.
England won 46-0 against Scotland. You were in the unusual position of sitting on the bench at the start. How did that feel? And tell us, are you going to be back this week in the starting lineup?
I can't give too much away, but to be on the bench, to be fair, I was completely fine about it. It's about us learning combinations. You never know what's going to happen within a game, and making sure the squad are fully prepared. And also made me be able to take a bit more of a back seat. Zoe Allcroft was the Red Roses captain for the week. So actually let her take the lead and just make sure that she was comfortable in doing that and I could provide her anything that she needed.
So back to Twickenham this weekend. I will be there with my daughter Sophia, 6-year-old. First trip to Twickenham, going with my mate Rob and his daughter Grace. We can't wait. The girls are so excited about going, seeing the game. 44,500 tickets sold so far as well, so it's going to be a big crowd. How much are you looking forward to getting back to Twickenham and playing there, and what are you looking forward to the most?
Yeah, we can't wait. It's the home of English rugby. It's our home, and we know we've got 45,000 fans going to be there. Hopefully, we'll get more throughout this week, and You know, it's just an experience for me. I've played there many times now, and the most amazing experience was playing that Six Nations decider against France last season. But for some of these girls, Maddie, this would be their first experience of it. And, you know, we want them to be able to really enjoy the experience. But then also for us, it's about making those 45,000 people that come up to watch enjoy the game and want to come back and want to watch us. And we need to make sure that we put on a spectacle for them.
Also today, I think it was known, but Sunderland has been unveiled as the first of the host cities for the Women's World Cup in 2025. Have you ever played there before? And are there any other stadiums that you'd like to see on that list in this country that you'd like to play in?
Well, I'd love to play in Liverpool, Anfield, just because I'm a true Liverpool fan. And it was a disappointing result for us at the weekend, but that would be pretty epic. But I think to play in the stadium alike will be something really special and, you know, a very unique opportunity for us as rugby players. You know, a lot of big games are usually played in the likes of Twickenham. They always play the Prem final there in for the men. And actually to move the game around, we've learned as the Red Roses, we put the Red Roses on the road, we can get fan bases in different areas of the country and pick up fans along the way. And then when we do get the game at Twickenham, that we're getting close to selling it out. And, you know, that's our target. Come 2025, we want to sell out Twickenham. I'm not being funny. For me, I want to sell out Twickenham when we play New Zealand there in Auckland Internationals. But it's nearly there. The following behind us is amazing. And we went to Scotland at the weekend, but the crowd, they were so supportive of the Red Roses. And it just shows that actually Northern people actually found it was closer to go to Edinburgh to watch us than sometimes down in London. So, you know, we got fans all over the place and we keep wanting to put the game on for them.
I could tell by your accent, actually, that you are a Liverpool fan. It's just a bit of a giveaway, isn't it? Being from Somerset.
Yeah, West Country.
Where did that come from?
I don't actually know. So my family, my auntie supported Liverpool, my uncle, and I think I just liked the colour red when I was a kid, which is a bit embarrassing when I come to think about it now. But every weekend we used to just watch Liverpool. And like my brother, he supports Blackburn Rovers and he only supported them because they won the league this one time.
The one time.
But it got them a lot of fans.
Is there any other girls within the squad? Are they football fans as well or not?
Oh yeah, massive. So Holly Aitchison and Hannah Bottleman, massive Liverpool fans. And then you've got Zoe Harrison. She is a Chelsea fan, a Blues through and through. She constantly goes and watches them. You've got Amy Cocaine, so Aston Villa. And if you do Amy's initials, so AVF, it's the initials for Aston Villa. So their mum and dad thought about that proper. Yeah. I want to say Poppy Cleo is a massive West Ham fan. So I hope I've got all them right, because if the girls listen to this and I've got it wrong, I'm going to be in trouble.
Well, I'm most disappointed there's no Manchester United fans in there. But we've got Knicks are Coventry City fans. So there's probably even less of those within the squad, isn't there?
Well, Wembley on Sunday.
Going to Wembley on Sunday.
This is it, the big one. Marley, I mean, there's an announcement that Royal London are putting £3 million into helping the women's Lions team, build the women's Lions team. And obviously the inaugural women's Lions tour is everything's building towards that in 2027, isn't it? I just wondered what you thought about that. I mean, obviously it's a massive boost for the women's game just generally, isn't it? I mean, the fact that big companies are willing to put sort of cold, hard cash behind it, cutthroat companies wouldn't do it if they didn't see that growth in there. You know, these are business decisions which only further strengthens the impact of the women's game.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, if you look at women's sport in general, what the Euros did for women's sport, but then also we've got a home World Cup in 2025. You're only seeing it up and massively up. And, you know, these big companies, they want to support it. They see the value. They don't just see the value in the sport, but they see the value in the person. And I think that's massive and something that it's nice to be a part of and to keep growing that.
Now, very related, we are looking at how we grow the game with our sponsor, QBE Business Insurance. There's clearly at the moment, Marley, a big issue with girls being disengaged from sporting activity. I read a report from London Sport last year that said that activity levels are actually lower now amongst teenagers than they were before the pandemic. During your own teenage years, did you face any barriers or challenges? And if so, how did you overcome them? And what did playing rugby as a teen give you in terms of your own mental, physical and emotional health?
I think for me, the biggest barrier in rugby was the fact that not enough clubs locally had women's and girls teams. So my mum would have to drive me an hour and a half to then go play for a team to just play on a Saturday or a Sunday. I think that was probably a massive barrier, because the fact that she was a single parent with me and my brother trying to ferry us around for different sports, actually, she did an amazing job at that. But then also, I think, you know, the things when you're at school and, you know, sports isn't the cool thing to do anymore. And, you know, the girls want to go out and do what the latest trend on TikTok is and stuff like that. But I think for me, it was staying true to myself, that what I got from rugby, and rugby gave me so much. It always brought me back to, I always say, like, if you look at the road and then you've got shoots off of it. And, you know, rugby always brought me back to that main road of where I want to be. And I'm sat here now with 102 caps, and I feel very lucky that rugby was there for me, because I don't know where I'd be now, but it definitely wouldn't have travelled the world playing 15s and 7s, been to 3 World Cups, learning about how to win one and be on a massive high, to then losing 2 in it, really, really hitting you. So I think, you know, sport can give you so much, and the people you meet along the way, not just colleagues, not just people you play with, but that they become your best friends, you know, your mates that, yeah, you don't want to just talk about rugby with, you want to talk about life with and go on holidays with and have a good time.
Well, my daughter, Sophia, coming on Saturday, you never know, she might be an England player of the future. She might be, you know, she might be won over after seeing on Saturday. Best of luck. Hope everything comes well on Saturday against Ireland. We'll certainly be cheering you on. Thanks for joining us again.
No worries.
And we really look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Thank you so much. See you next week, guys.
So this weekend sees the return of the Premiership, and we have 3 games on Saturday and 2 on Sunday. Nick, I'm going to ask you for some predictions on who you think is going to win. First up on Saturday, Saracens against Gloucester.
Yeah, I think Saracens will win that. Gloucester are obviously moving in the right direction, resurgent, but I think Saracens have got some ground to make up, and they'll be extremely frustrated with the manner and the defeat in itself in Bordeaux, and they'll be ready to get cracking again.
Then we have an East Midlands derby, Northampton, fresh from beating the Bulls and reaching the Investec Champions Cup semi-final, where they'll play Leinster, are playing Leicester. Who do you think is going to win that one?
Ooh, it's going to be tight. I think Northampton will win, and I think you have to give them great credit for everything they've done this season, getting their game in order and just their general approach. And Phil Dowson has done a fantastic job. And yeah, I think they will have just too much for Leicester, who, to be fair, are also on the up as well.
Then we have a West Country derby, Exeter against Bath. Who do you fancy in that one?
I think the key thing here will be how much Exeter's trip to Toulouse has taken out of them. Obviously, they're at home and they've been in great form. And I think what Rob Baxter's done this season with reinvigorating the squad, sort of turning over the squad, the playing squad, is fantastic. Bath are probably really pushing to try to win this league, aren't they? And finally make good on years and years of investment and everything that's gone with it from Bruce Craig. I don't know. I think maybe Bath might just shade that, only because maybe Exeter had just come back a bit battered and bruised and a little bit worn out. Because I think if Toulouse put you through the ringer and you come out the wrong side of it, it maybe takes its toll, doesn't it?
Tough, yeah. Sale against Harlequins, we'll gloss over and say Quins are going to win because we've had Will Collier on.
Yep.
And the final one, Bristol against Newcastle.
Yeah, well, Bristol will be really putting the pressure on themselves to get the job done in this one. And Bristol are fascinating study, aren't they? Because they could be anything. They could be the best team in the league, and they could be almost the worst team in the league on their day. But they've got so much firepower in there, you'd expect them to turn this over. But, you know, fair play to Newcastle for trying desperately to reverse things, and it'd be interesting as well to see what Steve Diamond can do there in the short to medium term.
Bristol 2 from 2, but 2 weeks off. So, yeah, you never know, do you? Yeah. Nick, I have to say, thank you very much for keeping me company in the studio while Lawrence has been away on his cycle slam.
Pleasure.
Before we go, Lawrence has actually sent us a message. Lawrence, how's it going out there?
Hello, podcast team. Lawrence here, or should I say Lorenzo. We're just about to start day 3 of stage 1 of the Dallaglio Cycle Slam, currently in a town called Grosseto, and we are heading 110 kilometres to Siena, the beautiful city of Siena. It's been a pretty fast start, an epic first 2 days, cycling over 250 kilometres and 3,500 metres. So as you can imagine, I'm recording this message standing up right now, and another 8 days to go on this incredible adventure with all these amazing cyclists raising money for Dallaglio Rugby Works. Now, on to rugby matters. I hear that you've had Will Collier on the pod this week, so my sincere congratulations to him and to Harlequins for that incredible away win in Bordeaux. probably goes down as one of the all-time epic European rugby matches. Anyway, appreciate that you're in the studio without me. Thanks for keeping my seat warm, Nick and Steve, Batman and Robin, and I'll check in with you again next week.
So keep up the good work, Lawrence. Don't forget, you can donate to Lawrence's fundraising page for Rugby Works. We've added the links in the show notes. That's all for this week. Our thanks to Will Collier, Marley Packer, and also to Fox Sports Studios. Nick and I will be here again next week, so I hope you join us. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.